Hello and welcome to the World Soccer Talk podcast, your weekly dose of talking about watching soccer on TV, online and on apps. Coming up on episode 10 of the World Soccer Talk podcast, we discuss the news reports about El Clasico possibly coming to the United States, our pluses and minuses about the 2017 MLS TV schedule, thoughts on the coverage of the Africa Cup of Nations, news about Liga MX scoring their best ever viewing number for a game on a Saturday night, and much, much more. My name is Christopher Harris, a.k.a. The Gaffer. I'm joined by Kartik Krishnayar. Kartik, how are you, sir?
I'm doing quite well, thanks, Chris.
All right, Kartik. So let's dive right in. We're going to go right into segment one, which is what we've been watching, and I thought I'd have you kick that off.
Yeah, I had kind of an abbreviated weekend in terms of watching football because I was actually calling a match for Fox Soccer Plus, the English language feed for the Vasco da Gama Barcelona Ecuador friendly, or actually a Florida Cup match. I know my broadcast partner Ryan Sudol and myself kept referring to it as friendly during the broadcast, but it's actually part of a cup competition, kind of a glorified friendly cup competition here in the state of Florida, where we get teams from South America and teams from the Bundesliga every year. And the portion of the competition with Bundesliga teams is over, and Wolfsburg won that. And then this is the portion of the competition with some South American and Brazilian teams that are competing. So I was doing that. So Saturday, I got to watch a full day of football. Bundesliga is not back. So I saw Spurs West Brom first thing in the morning. That was a scary good performance by Spurs, considering how well West Brom tends to defend, although this is something that I think we've hit on in the predecessor show of this on World Soccer Talk, is that oftentimes when Tony Pulis's teams give up a first goal away from home against one of the big sides, they give up a second and a third, and in this case, a fourth. So that was interesting. The Saturday 3 p.m. kickoffs were nothing too exciting there. I was wanting to see Swansea, Chris, and you'll touch on this. And that was an embarrassing performance. And then Leicester-Chelsea was one-way traffic, and Chelsea so far so good without Diego Costa. Everton City on Sunday I watched and then had to go do my Florida Cup broadcast. Had to report 3 hours early for that, or 2.5 hours early. And we had a full 20-minute pregame show and all of this stuff that I'm not accustomed to doing with local broadcasts. It was kind of neat, though, to do a national broadcast like that. And so came back and saw match of the day two. I still have Goal Zone on tape, but match of the day two, which was very interesting because what I've been frustrated about at times, and we've talked about this in previous shows, is that NBC tends to use the same bits from Goal Zone that they do for match of the day. Now, in this match of the day two, with the two matches, the two Merseyside versus Manchester matches to break down, they had original analysis in the match of the day on the match of the day set with the two Robbies, and then some very good I assume this was on Goal Zone as well, interviews that Arlo White, Danny Higginbotham Graham Lasso did with Jurgen Klopp and Zlatan, and those were and Henrik Mkhitaryan, and those were outstanding. It's pretty. You get the personalities, right? I mean, it's Liverpool, Manchester United. That's one part of it. But you get the personality. Mkhitaryan is interesting because I've watched him on Fubo TV. They have Borussia Dortmund television, and they have all of the features that come with that. So I've actually gotten to know Mkhitaryan the last few years from just watching him on Fubo and like his personality. Mm-hmm. So he's an interesting guy. And then when you have Zlatan and Klopp, you have larger-than-life figures giving you these – pitch side interviews. And Klopp, of course, had been really heated at the end of that match and had gone after Mourinho after Firmino was taken down because Wijnaldum was in space and would have been one-on-one on De Gea. So it was a smart tactical foul by Ander Herrera, if you want to be perfectly cynical and objective about it. But this is where the pitch side studio comes in, is that when you have these larger-than-life colorful figures in English football, and you're able to get them out to speak to you in the heat of the moment or right after the heat of the moment. I thought it was just brilliant television, both those interviews.
Yeah, the pitch side studio was fantastic. I mean, and that was one of the things we've talked about in previous episodes where we've kind of wish there were more of these. But again, some of it is probably access. Some of it is just in terms of talent, in terms of availability. And I mean, there's a lot, probably a lot of logistics to make these things happen. But to me, I missed the post-match interviews with Zlatan, Mkhitaryan, and Klopp. So I need to go back and watch those. But even the pre-match, I mean, to me, it was wonderful seeing Arlo White there with Graeme Le'Soux and Danny Higginbotham. I mean, having Wayne Rooney kind of knock the ball around right in front of you, Rooney catching the ball, almost hitting Graeme Le'Soux's head, but it just brings you right into the action.
I should mention that for my Florida Cup broadcast on Fox Soccer Plus, they had us pitch side. Okay. I have never called a game pitch side before. I've always been in a tower or in a press box when I've done games, and it is completely different to call a game and observe a game from that. And I felt like I was able to give a lot, maybe it wasn't better analysis, but as that game wore on, and for those of you who do want to watch my commentary, you can find it on the Fox Soccer To Go app still, I'm sure. Being pitch side is just completely different. And it's not something that because I've obviously been pitch side as a public relations officer, a communications officer, but I've never done a broadcast from there or tried to analyze from there. And even when we were doing our pregame during the team warmups, it gives you a completely different perspective. And so you mentioning Rooney kicking the ball around right behind the pitch side studio. Uh-huh. It is different. It's different than being in a broadcast location, however many rows up.
Which you know, Kartik, you and I know that being in this kind of press box or kind of gantries, basically, it's very sterile. It takes you away from the pitch. And for the viewer, I mean, to have the pitch side studio, it sucks you right in. It sucks you right into the stadium. You know, I mean, it gives you a completely different perspective. And then the talent's a little bit more relaxed and a little bit more, you mean, probably saying some things that maybe they usually wouldn't say, but or pointing out observations that they probably wouldn't normally make. But yeah, for the viewer, it was fantastic, and I really applaud NBC for doing that. We haven't really seen a lot of that. I mean, I know the Bundesliga has done that in the past. They like to have pitch-side studios. In the UK, from time to time, it doesn't happen all the time. But really, in the US, as far as I know, Kartik, it's kind of a new phenomenon in terms of having kind of pitch-side studios, and it really does make a difference. And I'd love to see NBC continue to do that, which I'm sure they will. But I'd like to see Fox do that too. I mean, I'd like to see some of the Major League Soccer broadcast too, that type of technique.
Yeah, I think that there's always logistical issues at facilities, right, as to what prevents it from happening. But yeah, it gives you a whole different element into the game. The question is, what does NBC, what is their criteria, a big question for me, in determining which games get this pitch-side studio? Liverpool, Manchester United's a natural, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously, but again, I was a little surprised during the holiday period, during the festive period, that Chelsea, Spurs didn't get one, even though they did have the benefit of Neil Ashton being there, I think, with his normal newspaper beat. That's probably why he was at the stadium at White Hart Lane that day. But Liverpool, Man City didn't get one. They did give one to Man City, Arsenal. So it seems a flip of the coin in some cases, which games get it and which games don't.
Yeah, and hopefully, too, NBC will continue doing kind of their going to England, taking the talent, the whole production team, and taking them to England to do the broadcast there. Because like we saw, a couple of years ago was Burnley. And I think that was the first one that they ever did, where they went to Burnley and had the pitch side studio there. I think it was Burnley against Arsenal or something like that. But it's fantastic watching. And as a soccer fan, it's incredible to watch. I think I just really love it. In terms of some of the action I watched this past weekend, one thing that's been really impressing me, Kartik, from a football playing level is Leeds United. And I've had a chance to kind of watch them now for last two or three games.
Does that surprise you?
It does.
Look, I mean, well, they've got a manager you're familiar with.
Oh gosh, we're going to go into that. Well, yeah, I mean, I have a lot of respect for Gary Monk, and he's done a brilliant job. I'm talking more about the institution of Leeds United in terms of just, you mean, the change in ownership and just all the backroom kind of kind of off the pitch drama in the last few years. But yeah, I guess I haven't watched a lot of Leeds United, but when I have watched them so far this season, I've been really impressed. I've been really well organized. Have some really up and coming players. It's a great team ethic, and I think they're definitely playoff contenders and could make a run and could make it back into the Premier League next season. I'd love to see that, but yeah, I have been impressed. And then Kartik, in terms of some of the other things I've been watching, actually the other thing about the Man United against Liverpool match too was the first use of a spider cam, and we've seen this before. In other broadcasts, in other competitions, probably the World Cup probably comes to mind in terms of one example. But what did you think in terms of the spider cam during the match, good or bad?
I guess it just enhanced another, it added another feature, another angle to the coverage. I mean, it wasn't, it was noticeable if you were looking for it, but I think it just kind of complemented what they already had in terms of their coverage of this match.
Me too, because I thought it was one of those things, it wasn't excessive. So in previous years, well, going way back, David Beckham's first game for LA Galaxy in MLS, and that was one where they had a Beckham cam, and at times it made me dizzy just because the amount of times they were using it and kind of all the different cameras angles, it was just too much.
Yeah, I think that's a thing from American football where you keep an eye on a wide receiver or some sort of guy and there's stoppages. In football, in soccer football, I would love to see, if they're ever going to do that individual player cam again, it'd be someone like N'Golo Kanté, who covers so much ground and is so effective in the middle of the park. Of course, they never will for a player like that. I mean, it's going to be for some glamorous player up front that does less running or a winger. So I think it's pretty much useless unless you use it on a player like Kanté or some sort of central midfielder that's covering a lot of ground.
Although NBC does have that tactical cam that they have, that they use not every game, but many Premier League games, and you just go to NBCSports.com and you can see it there usually. Actually, it's NBCSports.com/live, and I think it's probably on the NBC Sports app too. That's not going to give you a player-specific kind of a view, but you can see tactically the whole pitch and see kind of N'Golo Kanté in terms of one example, how he's lining up and his positioning, etc. But so spider cam, thumbs up from me on that one. In terms of some of the other things I've been seeing, Africa Cup of Nations is something I've been watching pretty closely this past week and kicked off last weekend. I love the format of it. It's pretty much two games a day for me. Working in my office, you got an 11 o'clock game Eastern time and a 2 o'clock game. So it's entertaining to watch in terms of having some great football on during the daytime. But the other thing too is that the atmosphere at the stadiums has been great. It's they haven't been, except for the Gabon games, it hasn't been like large packed stadiums. There's been a lot of empty seats. But the atmosphere inside the stadiums has been really, really entertaining. If anyone's watched the games, or if you haven't watched the games, I definitely encourage you to do it. Part of it is from the crowd point of view in terms of the supporters. This is just some wild costumes, face paints, crazy fans. I mean, just really kind of these fans extremely, extremely passionate about football and about their country, and they're cheering them on. So from that, the crowd shots are really entertaining to watch. The football has been good. It hasn't been brilliant. The games have been pretty much a lot of draws and low-scoring games. So it's been closely fought matches, a couple upsets here and there. But the level of football has been good. Lots of skill on display. Pretty much more open matches than what we're typical to see on club football. And anyone who watches European football or football from around the world, you'll notice tons and tons of stars from clubs from all the way around the world playing in almost every single match for every single team. I mean, it just gives you a great example of how much talent there is, African talent there is throughout the world, playing for some of the top teams at all levels throughout the world in watching this. But so far, for me at least, Kartik, for the Africa Cup of Nations, it's a thumbs up. All the games have been on beIN Sports or beIN Sports Connect. And if you don't get Connect, you can always get it through Fubo. But I've enjoyed it. A couple of the matches so far, the commentary was from Mario Bonetti and Andres Cordero. But most of the matches have been from, it sounds like a South African commentator. And probably some of our listeners probably know his name. I'm not sure who it is. But it's been good. It's been entertaining. And then Kartik, last but not least, FA Cup. So I watched a couple of the FA Cup replays. We had the Lincoln City against Ipswich Town match earlier this week. And great game and an upset. I mean, it was a beautiful goal, I think by Arnold, I think it was, for Lincoln City. And they deserved to go through. A couple of interesting things from a TV watching perspective was that halftime they had a camera in Lincoln City's dressing room, so you can actually look in and see kind of the players getting ready and the manager kind of, you mean, barking at the players. You always like to see that, so kind of that fly on the wall perspective. And also the other thing too that was interesting was that just the crowd reaction. So you could obviously tell that Lincoln doesn't get a lot of games on television, especially a lot of live games, especially beamed around the world. And just whenever the camera kind of panned across the crowd, you just had some interesting kind of reactions from that and some great characters from that. And then last but not least, Kartik, the very final game I watched this week so far was Plymouth Argyle against Liverpool. And it was Plymouth had chances to actually get equalisers in this game. Liverpool scored a pretty early game, early goal. But it was an entertaining match, great atmosphere. The Plymouth fans, you could tell, were into it and cheered from beginning to end. And we'll get into that a little bit later in terms of why this match was a little bit special for TV viewers. But overall, I enjoyed it and looking forward to FA Cup fourth round that's coming in just over a week from now. Okay, Kartik, let's move on to segment two, which is our latest TV / streaming news. And I'll kick this off, Kartik, by saying that reporting that El Nuevo Herald, which is the Spanish-language version of the Miami Herald, and actually the story is written by someone we know, Kayvon, he's reporting that Barcelona will play Real Madrid in Miami this summer as part of the International Champions Cup. It'll be the first time that El Clásico has ever been played outside of Spain. And you can imagine, Kartik, with this one, it's going to be a ratings bonanza for television, not just in the US, but worldwide. It's going to be a massive match if it does happen. It hasn't been officially confirmed yet, but the reports are pointing that this is going to happen at the Hard Rock Stadium. In the US, ESPN has the rights. They picked those up last year, and they have them for a couple more years. So if this does happen, Kartik, this is going to be monster TV ratings, I imagine.
Yeah, they picked them up for a song, basically. I mean, there was a decline in the rights fee, remember, that they paid compared to what Fox, the International Champions Cup had wanted from Fox and potentially from NBC. So they got a cheap property. I'll admit I didn't watch any of it last year. I was burnt out after the Euros, knowing that European seasons were about to start. I was in the middle of a political campaign as well. So I'm looking forward to seeing ESPN's coverage of this next year, particularly considering they have been adding broadcast talent. And I guess we'll get to that in a few minutes.
Yeah, definitely. And what's the next news item, Kartik, we've got?
Well, I've got Hercules Gomez joining. We'll get to that in a minute. I got ahead of myself again with the ESPN thing. According to Bloomberg, Fox has expressed interest in buying rights to a new Pan-American tournament, which could happen as early as 2020. And this just exploded on social media when this article came out from Bloomberg on today's Thursday. So it came out Tuesday morning. The Gold Cup would be every 4 years to accommodate the new tournament. And there would be some sort of reformulation, potentially, of when Copa America took place, although as of now, 2023, 2027 is the schedule for Copa Americas. This is coming off of the success of the Copa America Centenario. It would be a very, very interesting tournament. Again, I think I've got a concern about the number of international tournaments going on and the proliferation of international football and how it affects club football and how it affects the actual soul and heart of the sport, which is club football. But international football seems to drive TV audiences. It seems to be driving casual interest in the sport, and FIFA and its associated confederations make a lot of money off of these tournaments. So I think we're going to continue to see this. We're getting a 48-team World Cup. We're getting a European Nations Cup, which, by the way, will be on ESPN. I know we've talked about that before, starting after 2018. We might get this new Pan American tournament, which potentially will be on Fox here in the United States. We're getting all of these new events. We're getting a Euro Championship in 2020 that will be sprawling across the continent, all the way from Azerbaijan to Wembley. So I don't know. I mean, I guess it's exciting. It gives us something to do over the summers, but there at some point it's going to impact the club sport and the club game, which is the core of this sport globally. So I'm watching with a little bit of concern, I have to admit.
Yeah, and this tournament, to me, it sounds like Copa America Centenario, but not with the Copa America name. But with it being Pan American, hopefully then the Caribbean countries and kind of the Central American countries can also compete too. So really, this is a cash cow. I mean, I'm sure CONMEBOL and CONCACAF are looking at this as an opportunity to say, okay, let's just do Gold Cup every 4 years instead of every 2 years. And U.S., Mexico, you guys can make a lot more money from having kind of this Pan American tournament instead. And playing against higher level competition. So, I don't know. That's the thing, though, too. In terms of international football, we know that, I mean, to me, I'm also a club soccer fan, too, but international football I respect and enjoy at times. But international football on a national level, especially in competitions, is usually where you get the massive TV ratings. And a lot of that's wrapped up in kind of patriotism and pride about your country, kind of supporting your country. And that does sweep nations, especially if it's a tournament where it's United States is playing Mexico or whoever they're playing, Brazil. So it can get passionate and it can equal big TV ratings, which can equal sponsorships, television, money. So Kartik, next news item is that Fox Sports this week, Wednesday, announced the hiring of Kate Abdo. And we talked about this on last week's episode, actually. And we broke the news a week ago that Kate was going to be joining Fox Sports. It wasn't made official until yesterday. Her first broadcast was on the Plymouth-Liverpool game. And she looked good. She looked she's thought-provoking. And hopefully it's going to raise the bar in terms of maybe the Warren Bartons of the world kind of helping, trying to pull them up a bit in terms of having some more intelligent conversations or just trying to get them more involved. It'll be interesting. And she's going to be in charge of not just the Bundesliga hosting that. She's also going to be doing the FA Cup, Europa League, Confederations Cup, and the World Cup. So where that leaves Rob Stone is Rob Stone's going to be hosting the Champions League. And we'll have to see what happens to Rob Stone in terms of whether he's going to be doing more college football and some other traditional American sports. And
MLS.
That's true, Kartik. Yeah, so MLS. So maybe and then actually that probably gives him a full card right there in terms of Champions League, MLS, and then, whatever his American, traditional American pastimes are in terms of the
and he'll be part of the World Cup and Confederations Cup coverage.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, so he's going to be sharing those duties, I'm sure, with Kate Abdo. What was interesting in the press release, too, is that they didn't mention Ian Joy at all, which I thought was kind of strange. They did mention Rob Stone.
Yeah, so as I teased a little earlier and got ahead of myself, Hercules Gomez just retired from the Seattle Sounders, just retired from professional football, and has joined the ESPN team as a soccer studio analyst. They hired Julie Stewart Binks, who's one of my favorite sideline reporters. I think could do more than be just a sideline reporter, and I think she might do more at ESPN. They hired her away from Fox right after MLS Cup last month, which, by the way, Hercules Gomez's team, the Seattle Sounders, won on penalty kicks. So that's two, and Gomez worked during the MLS break, international breaks for Fox on international duty, Copa America, other national team related games during international breaks when he wasn't playing for Seattle this past season. So that's two Fox personalities that have been hired by ESPN in the last 2 months. Now, ESPN doesn't have many soccer properties left, but between ESPN FC, which this week has been on location with Max Brados and Shaka Hislop and Ali Moreno in Los Angeles for MLS Media Days, and between and that, and then, of course, their normal daily studio show with Dan Thomas or Alexis Nunez hosting Paul Mariner, Steve Nichol, Craig Verley, Shaka Hislop, Gab Marcotti, Stuart Robson, whoever else, Brian McBride also, they have a healthy rotation of studio people coming through. Obviously, they've got MLS, they've got some European qualifiers, and they, of course, will have the European Nations Cup starting after the 2018 World Cup. Oh, and of course, also the International Champions Cup, which we talked about. So I guess there is enough for all of these people. And we're going to get into the MLS schedule and our topic of the week, TV schedule, and we'll get into a little bit of the enhanced coverage, or I shouldn't say enhanced, but increased coverage. Might be enhanced with all these hirings that ESPN and Fox are going to have this season.
I'm surprised, though, that Fox let Hercules Gomez go, just because I thought he did a great job during Copa America. He was really kind of like the straight talker. He was the one that made the most sense when you had, you know, Fernando Fiore kind of with his comedy act, and he had Alexi Lalas with kind of
maybe that's why
pounding the table, and then he had this guy who was very intelligent, good conversationalist, good speaker.
But that fits the ESPN culture and the ESPN presentation method better than it does Fox. So mm-hmm. I think he's a pretty natural fit at ESPN. Whereas at Fox, he seemed to fish out of water while there was all this other, these theatrics going on around him, which is why I wouldn't be shocked if Landon Donovan retires from football and doesn't take some of the offers we've heard associated with him in the last few weeks and goes back into broadcasting. I'm thinking he might end up at ESPN also.
Yeah, especially, well, maybe Fox, though, too. I mean, he's got to look at the World Cup. And
well,
think
of course, he lives in Los Angeles, so
right.
I mean, that's also part of it. But Hercules Gomez is from the West Coast. He's born and grew up in Las Vegas, and I guess he's going to have to make the trek to Connecticut for ESPN duty. But at a certain point, you have to go where you fit. And mm-hmm. we found in the case of Brian McBride, we've had this conversation before on the show, that I thought he was terrible at Fox.
Yeah.
And he's turned into a gem at ESPN. I mean, it's just who you surround yourself with and the style. And the same can be said for Kyle Martino, who I rank as the best analyst based in the United States, other than Craig Verley, best studio analyst. When he was at Fox, he was a disaster.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I think it's the culture that you're around. And now looking back, I mean, I can't imagine how Martino did such a poor job at Fox, but I think it was the culture of the network, because he's been consistently good at NBC since he got there, starting with MLS and then the Premier League the last four seasons. Mm-hmm. Again, I think it's the Fox culture, but maybe that'll change with people like Kate Abdo coming in, and I think there's a seriousness to the match commentary that John Strong gives that they didn't necessarily have before. So, and JP doing more stuff on Fox too helps there. That it's the studio with Fox that still really annoys me.
Yeah, yeah. Kate Abdo definitely raises the bar considerably for Fox. Warren Bott, and this is like kind of a snafu, one of those things that you kind of say, and then you kind of he probably didn't even realize he made the mistake yesterday. But for the Plymouth against Liverpool match, post-match, which was interesting, actually, was that they went right into doing a weekend preview for the Bundesliga, which makes sense. I mean, they have the rights to the Bundesliga. Kate Abdo is a big fan of German soccer. And then you've got Warren Barton, who probably doesn't follow the Bundesliga that much or that closely. And he had Stu Holden. And Stu Holden does a great job. But Warren Barton was talking about how in 2006, Christian Pulisic had a great year. And of course, he meant 2016, but it's like those on-air flubs that just make him look very amateurish. And so hopefully Kate will raise the bar, and hopefully those underneath her will do the same thing too. Okay, Kartik, let's move on to the next segment, and that's TV ratings. Not a lot to talk about this week. We're still waiting on a couple of numbers, but the big news coming out of the United States this week is that Univision Deportes, the Spanish language channel, has scored the most viewed Liga MX match ever in a Saturday night time slot, and that time slot is 8 o'clock to 10 o'clock Eastern time. And the number was 1.5 million people that watched the match. And it was Monterrey against Guadalajara. And big numbers. And I think that game was on Univision and Univision Deportes. But still, that's big numbers for the return of Liga MX. We're now into, what, the Clausura part of the season, second half of the season.
Yeah. Yeah, and I have that match on my DVR and still have not watched it, so that's why I can get into it. Monterrey, to me, is one of the best teams to watch in the Americas. I mean, I love the way they play football. Chivas is always going to drive numbers. I believe that that was the highest ever. Oh, yeah, for Saturday night, 8 to 10. Correct, correct. And we also have, Chris, the 881,000 for Man United, Liverpool on NBCSN in the 11 a.m. Eastern to 1 p.m. Eastern time slot on NBCSN. Now, the second half of this game was also shown on NBC, which was a little odd, I must admit. But they showed the second half of the game on over-the-air NBC, and I'm sure that will spike the number up considerably. We don't have those numbers yet.
Yeah, yeah. It makes you wonder how much it'll spike it by. So could we reach 1.5 million? I would think so, right? I mean, it's going to be a big number. We'll have it today, I'm sure, at World Soccer.
But it was a lead-in. But it was a lead-in to a hockey game, not a lead-in to an NFL game. So it may not.
That's true. But you're going to have some people that'll tune in that will kind of just they didn't know that the Pittsburgh Steelers game had been moved. Maybe they just tuned in. But the other thing too, well, I guess this doesn't count. But I was going to say like bars and restaurants and things like that will have it on the background. But that's not going to count in the viewership numbers. But still. Yeah, it still should be pretty big, just because with it being on a broadcast network. So, yeah, as soon as we get those numbers, we'll go ahead and report those on worldsoccertalk.com, hopefully later today when you're hearing this podcast. And Kartik, moving on to our next segment, and that's Listener Mailbag. We've got one question this week, and this is from Caleb Napton, and he sent this in through Twitter. And he says, is NBCSN ever going to use those two bonus channels on Sling TV? They've had no programming as far as I can tell. And that's a great question, Caleb. I do not have the answer to that. I've reached out to Sling TV, and actually Sling TV replied to, I think, our comment on Twitter, or a tweet on Twitter, and said that they were going to look into it. So as of right now, there's no answer on that one. I know that Sling TV added these two bonus channels probably about a month ago now, maybe even a month and a half ago. And once they were added, we thought, okay, great, fantastic. All those matches that are usually on Premier League Extra Time, we can now watch on Sling TV on those two bonus channels. But for whatever reason, they haven't used them yet. So as soon as we get that information, we'll be sure to share it with you. And Kartik, if any listeners out there have any questions about anything we've talked about on this podcast or about watching soccer in general and on TV or on apps, where can they send their questions to?
Well, they can tweet at us at wsoccertalk.com, and then they can also tweet at me at KKFLA737. They can write to us at web@worldsoccertalk.com, and they can leave a comment on our Facebook page at facebook.com/worldsoccertalk. So, again, the Twitter handle is at wsoccertalk, not at worldsoccertalk, at wsoccertalk. So multiple ways to reach us.
Perfect. Awesome. And then going on to our last segment of the show, which is our featured topic of the week. This week, Kartik, I thought we'd tackle something that's kind of, it came out last week or after last week's show. It's a big topic, though. It's a meaty topic because it's going to last throughout the whole of 2017. And that is the MLS TV schedule. And you've had a chance to kind of go through this and take a look at it. What are your thoughts, kind of positives and negatives, in terms of what you've seen thus far, in terms of what they've announced with ESPN, Univision, and Fox Sports showing the games?
Well, there's a lot. I took a lot of time going over the schedule release and giving some of my observations. So let's go through them, and we'd love to hear feedback from our listeners about this. There are going to be four afternoon Fox Network games, including the projected opening of Atlanta United Stadium against Orlando City on July 30th. That's going to be a huge game. I plan to be there, actually. I plan to be in the building that day, and I'm working on getting myself credentialed for that match. Now, if it ends up being at Bobby Dodd Stadium and there's a stadium delay, then that's going to be a disaster. But as of now, although, I mean, I don't know that it'll affect the TV rating, but that's the plan is that to be the grand opening of Atlanta United's new stadium, which you're sharing with the Atlanta Falcons, of course. There is a sprinkling of Friday and Saturday ESPN games, which I find very interesting, because when this television contract began in 2015, the idea was to consistently have games in a Sunday evening time slot, generally 5 p.m. Eastern on Sunday, sometimes 4 p.m. Eastern on Sunday. That was consistently done week in and week out, so MLS fans knew where to find games. Now we have a number of Friday and Saturday ESPN games. We have an increase in ESPN telecasts this year, but that seems to be a reversal of intent. And one of the complaints in the previous television contract, or the previous television contracts, I should say, that MLS was working under, was that games were on at random times on random nights. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is
and
my.
Now, yeah, this is a reversal. Let's yeah, back to some of that.
And this is my biggest takeaway from the whole TV schedule is that it's changing. And in previous years, like you said, Kartik, there's been actually last season especially, a consistent TV watching window. So you could kind of basically close your eyes and know that, okay, on Friday nights you could tune in and watch a game on Unimas. And then on Saturday, most of the games are going to be on your local TV networks. From time to time, there might be a game on one of the major networks in the U.S. But Sunday was one of those days you can say, okay, all right, Sunday afternoon, I can tune into ESPN. I know there's going to be a Major League Soccer game on. And then Sunday night, I know there's going to be a game on FS1, maybe two games sometimes. For this season, for 2017, that changes everything. Most of the Univision or Unimas games are going to be on Saturday afternoons, 4-ish, 5-ish Eastern time. Like you said, Kartik, ESPN is picking up a bunch of games, showing Friday night games, some Saturday afternoon games, even there's some Unimas games, I think, on Sundays too. But FS1, Fox Sports, is pretty much the only one that's really sticking to kind of their format of having those Sunday night primetime games. But everything else has changed. So from an MLS perspective, I'm sure they're hoping and banking on soccer fans changing the habits a little bit and kind of doing a little bit more, you know, it could be 10 minutes of research to find out when your team's on or when the big games are on. Unfortunately, people are lazy. People kind of get used to kind of having those consistent time windows. And I think it's going to have an impact on kind of the TV viewing experience a little bit in 2017. And MLS is then probably hoping, especially ESPN, is hoping that, okay, well, moving these games to these different nights, and ESPN's the one that's moving the most. Hopefully, I'm sure ESPN's hoping that they can get some bigger TV view numbers for some games that maybe they're thinking that Sunday afternoon wasn't the best time, and maybe Fridays, let's try that, and let's try Saturdays and see what happens. But, it's going to be interesting. But it's a big change for MLS viewers, and challenge, I think, for MLS is getting the word out there, letting people know, and let's see how people react from that.
Yeah, I think that there's a kind of change in intent. Maybe there's a dissatisfaction with the television ratings, which we've articulated. Now, there's been a lot of pushback on that, but I think internally they take a very different posture than they do publicly. And this is interesting. Maybe they can dovetail on some Liga MX games on Saturday and Sunday on the Univision networks. Now, I have to point out, on Fridays, there were often times where they would have to preempt the first half of Liga MX games because they had an MLS game contractually they had to show. And they would keep a split screen, and I think that there was probably dissatisfaction with that among a lot of their viewers, because let's face it, the Liga MX game is going to get more viewers, more better ratings, with very few exceptions. So that was probably part of the consideration. I think the team breakdown is interesting, too, because I think MLS has tried to be this...
Ikar, one more thing just on that, just before you go into the teams. My take is that I think MLS probably was pleasantly surprised by how well the Univision numbers did. And Univision probably came back and said, you know what, we've been doing the Friday night games. They've been working really well for us. We probably better than we thought. Let's give us some more Saturday games. Give us some more Sunday games. Let's mix it up because we think that we can increase this. And then I think ESPN, on the other hand, were probably saying like, hey, we've been putting these games on our main ESPN channel on Sunday afternoons. And we've kind of piggybacked with kind of Fox, having Fox have the second games. We've been disappointed by these numbers. We don't think that... these numbers are that great. Give us some Friday night games. Or give us some Saturday games. Let's test those time slots and see if we can get some better numbers for those time slots. At least that's my take on it in terms of kind of the changes and kind of reading between the lines. But sorry to interrupt.
No. I think those are good points because I think the ratings have not been good enough. Let's face it. I mean, there's been pushback when you and I say that, but ratings have not been good enough. And trust me, I know enough people who work with MLS well enough to think that internally they understand this. They just externally are going to give a whole different picture of things. So that's my sense. Continuing on that theme, to me, it's interesting because MLS has always tried to be this all things to all people. We sell our parity. We sell... our competitiveness, we sell the fact that anybody can win a title. Well, I have to tell you, their schedule in terms of teams being featured and not featured, at least on the English language side of their broadcast, and in some cases in the Spanish language side too, reflect the same sort of kind of pragmatism or... elitism, if you want to call it, that the networks for national games in your major European leagues have to exercise, where you see more Manchester United and Liverpool and Chelsea, Spurs, Arsenal, Man City games on the national and international important time slots from the Premier League than you do the rest of the Premier League. You see them in the 7:45 a.m. Eastern time, 12:45 a.m. p.m. kickoff in the U.S., and then the 12:30 Eastern time, 5:30, and then the Monday night football, or the 11 a.m. Sunday. You see those teams featured in those time slots. Now what we're seeing, and this is important for American fans that follow the Premier League to understand that those 3 p.m., 10 a.m. kickoffs in this country are not shown in the U.K. They're not on national television in that country. They're not on TV at all. So you have a skewing. You don't necessarily get this impression in the U.S., but you have a skewing if you look at the time slots in the Premier League, who's playing on national television, who's playing on international television. Same thing with the Bundesliga. There's a skewing of that in the Bundesliga, and there's a little more equitability there. But and Spain, same thing. And Italy, same thing. I mean, these teams are featured in the important time slots. The Sunday afternoon game in Italy is almost always, it seems, featuring Juventus or Milan, one of the Milan sides, or Roma or Lazio, teams with big followings. And Fiorentino also, Fiorentino and Napoli to a lesser extent. So here's what's happened in MLS. There are 13 English-language broadcasts between Fox, FS1, and ESPN for Seattle and Portland each. These MLS teams play 34 regular season games. So that's well over a third of those two teams' games are on national TV. I applaud that because I have long said MLS should be featuring those two teams more than the New York and LA teams. By comparison, FC Dallas, who won last year's Supporters Shield and won the U.S. Open Cup, and who knows if Mauro Diaz hadn't been hurt and Fabian Castillo had not been sold to club in Turkey, how they would have finished up, they might have done the treble, might have been the first U.S. team to ever do the treble, makes only two national English language television appearances. Colorado, who had the second best record in the league, same thing, only two national national English language appearances. Vancouver and Montreal only make one. They're a Canadian team, so we get that. San Jose, Real Salt Lake, Houston, and DC United, oh, and Columbus, Columbus and Chicago all make only one. So it's also based on perceived strength and marketability of the teams, because in Chicago you have the third largest TV market. They're making one national television appearance. In Portland, you have I have the Nielsen numbers up here, so give me just a minute. Portland, you have the 24th largest TV market in the country, making 13 appearances. Okay,
yeah.
So that's pretty striking to me. Orlando has 10 national TV games in English.
Uh-huh.
Despite having never made the playoffs in their two seasons in MLS. That's because they've got Kaká, and they have the third most Spanish language games, because, again, there's a big following for them. So they have 14 total national television games. Atlanta United, which is an expansion team, and they're a pure expansion team. Orlando was brought up from the lower divisions. Minnesota, which is starting in MLS this season, and we'll get to them in a minute. They've moved up from NASL, from the second division. Atlanta is being shown 15 times, more than any other team in the league, between Spanish and English television. They have Tata Martino as their manager, and they've got this developing fan base. It's a massive following by MLS standards.
Yep.
Who knows if it sustains, but clearly there's an effort, and Atlanta is one of the largest TV markets in the country. It's the ninth largest TV market. There is an effort to showcase that team. Minnesota is going to have 8 English language television appearances, and they're an expansion team. So compare that. They're going to have 8 national television appearances on ESPN and Fox networks. Minnesota, as a team that's just coming up from NASL and whose games were last season were on VN Sport and on CBS Sports Network at random times, because that was the NASL TV package.
Mm-hmm.
That is compared to DC United, who's won more trophies than anyone in the history of this league, having one total appearance on English language national television. So MLS now, I guess, it depends on your perspective. If you're into parity and you're into the arguments about competitiveness, maybe you don't like this, but hey, Chris, maybe MLS is learning what the rest of the world has, which is that you have to showcase your bigger teams.
Yep.
And that doesn't necessarily mean your bigger markets. That means Atlanta is going to be a massive team. Orlando and Seattle and Portland have massive followings.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other teams that are featured prominently are the two New York teams. New York FC and Red Bulls, particularly New York FC.
I think part of it, though, is that MLS is, they're definitely cherry picking and smartly so. But I think part of it is they're looking at, okay, what stadiums can we have live matches at where the atmosphere is going to be a great spectacle and it's going to be a great representation of what Major League Soccer is all about, hoping then that people that tune in, either by accident or on purpose, will then gravitate to that league and go, hey, this is actually a great league to watch and great fan bases, passionate supporters. And you look at kind of Portland, Seattle, Orlando, I'm sure Atlanta, and kind of those kind of cities as cities that it's a great representation of Major League Soccer. You look at Dallas and Colorado just as two examples, and you think, okay, well, football playing-wise, they're actually good teams, but in terms of those stadiums, the attendance and kind of the atmosphere is, to be frank, flat. You mean lots of empty seats in Dallas as one example. So so I think it's smart from MLS. But then from a team-specific point of view, and I've heard this feedback too and read this feedback, is that some of the supporters are upset that they don't get to watch the team play that often on national television. And actually, I think even last week's podcast too, Kartik, we had a question from one of the listeners, and he was saying that he can't watch his Houston Dynamo games that often because they're blacked out in his area, and Houston's not on national television that much.
Yeah, they're on once this year.
Right.
Which, again, it was striking to me because it's never been this dramatic. There have always, for years, L.A. and New York Red Bulls have been on more, and then I had pushed a couple years ago the narrative that Seattle and Portland should be on more. I got a lot of pushback on that, by the way, and I gave the argument you just gave, which is atmosphere. Okay, if you're trying to attract people who are core football fans, okay, I know casual fans who want to be in the big media markets, core football fans who might watch the Premier League and Liga MX but don't watch your league, how are you going to attract them? You're going to attract them by showing an LA game with a static atmosphere at the Home Depot or the StubHub Center. I know LA reports sellouts, but their atmosphere is never that good. Or are you going to attract them by showing a Portland game? Better chance you're going to attract them by showing a Portland game. And the MLS has finally gotten that. The flip side of it is that that means bigger markets, because Houston is, as I pull up the Nielsen again, Houston is the, where is it? It's the 10th largest media market in the country. Dallas-Fort Worth, which had the best team in MLS last year that won the Supporters Shield and won the U.S. Open Cup, is the fifth largest television market in the country, yet they're only showing them twice. And it goes back to the atmosphere. I think they've gotten it as far as that's concerned.
Yeah. And I guess we'll have to wait and see. And if this does work from MLS's perspective, it makes sense. They're trying to increase those numbers, those view numbers, and it is very meaningful for the league. It's kind of the one last thing that, one biggest challenge that they have left, that they need to figure out a way to make it work, because that's going to lead to, you mean, more TV revenue down the road when the contracts come back up for renewal, but also from sponsorships, advertisers. I mean, that's really kind of where the money is. I mean, I think MLS is looking at that, thinking, hey, what can we do possibly to make this work, to the detriment of some teams? But they're in it as a league, as a whole, to try to increase MLS's exposure. So, Kartik, let's move on to the final segment. Well, we're actually in the final segment, but to let listeners know that if they do have any feedback or questions or comments in regards to anything we've spoken about on this podcast, including the TV schedules, of course, to definitely share their views. And before we go, any last thoughts in terms of the MLS TV schedule or anything we've discussed on the show today?
Yeah, I think for me, it's real interesting to see this dichotomy and how it breaks down in as far as the teams. And if there is going to be now an effort from MLS, maybe to pull away from the parity argument and highlight what could potentially be super clubs. And Orlando has a big following. I don't think they can be a super club. Los Angeles is in a big market. Maybe they could be one, the Galaxy. But really, if you're looking at potential super clubs in Major League Soccer, but Orlando and Portland are selling points for the league because of their atmospheres. And then the potential to be super clubs, I think, are Seattle and Atlanta. And Atlanta's already emerging. I think there's more talk about Atlanta abroad than I think there's ever been about an MLS club. Maybe MLS is beginning to transition towards that line of thinking. And it'll be interesting to see what happens in the next television contract and the next CBA negotiation with the players' union, because maybe they're understanding they have to elevate some of their clubs above the league or above the level of the rest of the league in order to be successful in the global market.
All right. Well, thank you, listeners, for listening. You can get a new episode of the World Soccer Talk podcast every Thursday. We've also added that to YouTube, too, so you can get these. You can actually listen to the podcast through YouTube, iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and, of course, worldsoccertalk.com. So don't forget to leave us a review on iTunes or Stitcher, and to be sure to send us your feedback or questions so we can read those out on air. And Kartik, over to you, sir.
Enjoy your football.